The Guardian.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
World Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
Incredible extra time in Holland, Costa Rica ends in more cruel savings than a Tory budget. As Sir Alex would say, football bloody Van Gaal. Oranges squeeze their way through despite incredible performance by Costa Rica. We wave the Ticos goodbye on a day of real drama. Also, Argentina beat Belgium. That's your lineup today in World Cup Football Daily.
Rastafari, it is I, Jaricio. Yeah, may I tell him something? Stood a 340, hard night.
Pura vida, pura vida.
Yeah,
Rastafari, I'm chilling by the river. One perfect country of me, brother and me sister. Yeah, make a show them how we do it in Costa Rica.
Pow! Costa Rican reggae. Not going to be hearing much more of that around Brazil, are we? The Ticos are on their way home after a quite extraordinary, what are we going to say, half hour of football? Hour of football? Just an amazing night. Anyway, James Horncastle's here, agog from the spectacle there in Salvador. So's Scott Murray, his fingers still a-smoking from doing the minute-by-minute on that crazy final quarter-final. Scott, what do you make of it?
Yeah, it was a strange game.
That's right.
It was probably the worst game of the tournament.
It was the worst of games. It was the best of games.
The first 80 minutes, and then just unbelievable. I think the moment that summed most of it up was when your man cleared the ball off the line, nearly took his own nose off with the clearance, and it battered off the bar. In Holland, I mean, deserved to win really, but it's just such a letdown that Costa Rica got so close. 2,500 of the pounds you'd have won for a World Cup win.
You sound like but you put some money on.
No, I didn't. I just think that, like, I wasn't particularly interested in it as to whether they got through or not at the start of the match, but by the end of it, it was, my God, they have to make it. They have to make it. It would have just been one of the most beautiful stories of all time, and it's just such a shame they came up short.
It's such a shame as well that their outstanding player, although obviously all the team put a shift in, etc., several shifts in, but Navas was just in extraordinary form. But it's funny that in the end it came down to another keeper being even better. The extraordinary story of Tim Krul coming on for the penalty shootout. Did you see what Van Gaal did there? As he's no doubt saying in his press conference, even now.
I did not. Remarkable move. I mean, everything that Van Gaal seems to have done has come off. You know, from the change,
including his trousers.
Yes. Yeah. I wasn't present in the dressing room for that, but the change in system before the tournament, the cooling break, tactical adjustments against Mexico, the late Fergie time win in that game as well. And this, his latest stunt, which apparently Paul Sturrock had also attempted in a Johnson's Paint Trophy game between Southend and Oxford United. So he's also big into that.
Martin O'Neill swapping keepers for Leicester City before penalties in the 1996 playoff final. So how about that?
I mean, it really did work. Obviously, Krul had been sat on the bench for that 120 minutes just doing his research because he dived the right way for all of Costa Rica's penalties. And
Van Gaal has his notebook, and I just wonder whether he handed them that and said, Tim, read up on it.
I mean, there's some great Dutch penalties because obviously Krul had to do half the job. The penalty takers who in past shootouts have missed and let Holland down did the job this time. I thought Van Persie and Kout's penalties were right in the corner, unsavable, because Navas dived, I think, the right way in both those. Outstanding penalties. And yeah, considering the complex that the Netherlands have had in that scenario over the years, it was a very confident and well-executed penalty shootout.
Yeah, extraordinary as well. Krul coming on like that and performing and so well. And Cillessen
getting behind him as well. I mean, people thought that he would begrudge coming off, but he was maybe he was.
I think he would.
Been briefed about it beforehand.
Possibly so.
Smacked of planning.
It was. I mean, it wasn't just the penalty shootouts, because from short time before the 90 was up, as you say, Scott, the game just caught fire, and then Holland was swarming all over Costa Rica like a gang of angry orange-coloured swarming things.
Although,
but then Costa Rica started doing some stuff of their own.
Well, towards the end of the second period of extra time, it was Costa Rica that probably had the better chances, apart from obviously then Schneider. Rattle the bar with that ludicrous.
Yeah, they hit the woodwork a couple of times. Well, should Costa Rica have had a penalty earlier on, though?
Was it Martin Zindi?
Yeah, I think it was. Well,
for
probably
the push on Campbell. Yeah. I need to see that again, because it looked as though he pushed Campbell as he was about to touch the ball, and that push stopped him from touching the ball. But again, I'd need to see it again.
One man who really did stand out in the officials' point of view was the Uzbeki linesman. Extraordinary. He had a big part to play, continually waving his flag in the air. Because has a team ever been flagged offside this much in a World Cup game?
Well, I mean, Costa Rica have been doing it to their opponents throughout this tournament. So I think Greece were caught offside a record times, Italy before that. And, yeah, it just goes to show how this offside trap that Costa Rica use is really well done. I think not since that Arsenal sort of Tony Adams and that sort of thing. It's... goes to show that it's a really well organised team at the end of the day. And
I thought you were going to mention the Baresi back line.
The Baresi back, yes. Yeah. Well, let's honour that one.
Oh, all right. Well, opinions divided on Costa Rica. Here's Barney Rone tweeting, Costa Rica should change their name to Just a Keeper. Ha 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 ha. But then on the opposite point of view, here's Barney Rone, who sometimes later points out nobody beat Costa Rica at the World Cup. Spot on, Barney.
Yeah, like New Zealand 4 years ago.
That's true.
And Scotland in 74.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
I think they might have been the first team to ever do that, which would be typically Scottish.
Italy went out on... Was they unbeaten in 1990?
Yes.
So France went out on penalties to Argentina.
But anyway, it was a pretty absolutely gobsmacking extra time. I mean, I know we've seen some great extra times, but this was one of the great ones.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, because it was just Schneider hitting the post and then the bar, the chance that Arena had when he shortly after coming on, where he really had that opportunity to win the game when they hadn't had a shot on target until extra time.
Costa Rica, massive round of applause to them. When you look at the semi-final lineup, though, you can't regret having the Netherlands facing Argentina now. Shades of 1978 in the World Cup final, and it does shape up as a really terrific match, that.
It does, although I think there's always a danger of we build up. I mean, we've just done that with France v Germany. We thought it was going to be a throwback to the great 1982 semi-final, and that was a complete damp squib. But yeah, hopefully not. I mean, Argentina, it's a weird thing after like sort of Brazil were sort of clodhoppers last night, and Holland killed off the romance of Costa Rica. It's almost like Argentina and Germany are the people's favourites now, the sort of teams of our hearts, the sort of bizarre 1990 tournament.
Well, what did you make of Argentina earlier on then in their game against Belgium?
Well, they were better. But like the bar is very low for that, isn't it? They were a bit... They started off well, and the game started well, I thought, and then it just degenerated into nonsense, to the point where there was actually quite a lot of discussion in the office as to whether this World Cup that people were going, this is a great, wonderful World Cup, is actually turning into, you know, quite a poor World Cup. So the game tonight came along just in time.
Well, Sean Ingle making the point that in terms of goals, this is actually way down in the knockout stages on the number scored in the much maligned or much vilified 2010 edition. But even though there haven't been many goals, and there really haven't, I mean, none in regulation time today, and only one each in the other three quarterfinals, it has been really rich in incident. I mean, it'd be interesting to see what happens in the semi-final. As you say, France and Germany completely didn't live up to expectations, but Argentina... Netherlands does look interesting, as indeed does Brazil, Germany, and Jonathan Wilson just tweeting, semi-finalists have 19 finals between them. bit of pedigree there.
Mm. It's also with Holland, you would think that they're probably owed a little bit of luck in South America, given what happened to them in the last minute of the 78 final,
yeah,
hitting the post through Rensen Brick. So, you know, maybe they're getting a little bit of payback.
Perhaps. Perhaps. Well, Dominic Fifield was in Brasilia for the day's other quarterfinal, Argentina-Belgium. A little bit earlier, we spoke to him.
World Cup Football Daily with AC Jimbo.
Dominic, how's Brasilia?
Brasilia is warm and a bit like Milton Keynes.
Yeah, perfect, in other words. Argentina, through to their first semi-final in the World Cup since 1990. What was their mood like post-game? What was their post-game press conference like?
Well, the press conference, Alejandro Sabella, wasn't exactly celebratory. One of the Argentine journalists began the press conference by serenading him and asking him to join in one of the chants, and he just sort of stared back at him, grunted the response, and then once clicked into a sort of rather cliched "the team did it, they all played magnificently" answer. But that sort of sums him up, I think. I don't think he doesn't look like the type of man who gets very emotional about things. Maybe he will do if they go on to win this tournament. It's a great achievement, obviously, getting to a first semi-final in 24 years, and the players all celebrating out on the pitch for quite some time after the final whistle. Their mood only tempered slightly by the possible injury that's been sustained by Angel Di Maria, which you know, renders them a big doubt for next week.
Yeah, certainly the latest word on that does seem to be more negative than positive. Sabella, not the most demonstrative, not the most exciting, quite a pragmatic fellow then. And some people were saying the same things about Argentina's performances, and indeed against Belgium today. A lot of people saying it wasn't the best game. I thought there were at least two moments of genius in this one, though. One was Messi's pass, which was just extraordinary.
He is obviously a master. It's not saying, and it's cliche to say how wonderful he is, but they can be functional as a team if they can get the best out of Lionel Messi. And I thought the system they used today, bringing in Lucas Biglia into midfield, seem to suit them. They seem more comfortable. They seem, admittedly, Belgium did not perform as we envisaged they would, but I thought Argentina made it very difficult for Belgium to do that. And the way that they pressed, the way that they stopped Belgium playing, it created the space for Messi to do what he does. And when he's got two or three players on him, as invariably is the case, two or three teammates are free, and he just finds them. He has that wonderful pass that he produced in the first half. But there was also a moment where he dribbled towards the edge of the Belgian box, and there were four Belgian players desperately trying to hack him down, and they couldn't get the ball off him. Yeah. He couldn't do it. Eventually, the foul came in, they won a free kick on the box, but he didn't score. He should have scored in stoppage time, but it was still an absolutely superb display from Messi, and then a privilege to see, to be honest.
Yeah, and it was in all areas of the game as well, because the Higuain goal, for example, it was Messi's pressing which actually won the ball back or forced company into the mistake.
Yeah, and Mascherano, you know, takes the ball, gives it back to Messi, and he, I think it was De Bruyne who tried to dispossess Messi. He just spun away from him, and they seem to click today. They seem more comfortable as a team. It's not going to be pretty watching them all the time. They're not going to be exhilarating. They're not going to tear at opponents, but whatever they produced, Messi will, you know, he will illuminate their performances. There will be effervescence from him, and the rest of them will be functional. And you know, that might be the winning formula come the end of this tournament.
Mm. Interesting stat that the match between these two sides saw just three shots on target, which is the lowest tally in a World Cup knockout game since the 1990 final. Remarkable. Mark Wilmot's post game. Was anyone serenading him?
No, he was a grumpy so-and-so as well. To be honest, some of the stuff that he came out with was remarkable. I mean, describing Argentina as an ordinary team and claiming that Messi should have had at least one yellow card for the fouls. He didn't come across particularly well post-match, has to be said. He said at one point, it's a matter of everybody learning how to lose gracefully, and he's clearly still learning that as coach. I think he didn't express this, but I think privately he would have been disappointed at the performance his team put in. I thought they were desperately disappointing throughout. It was almost like the occasion was got to them a bit pre-match. There was a nice moment in the tunnel just before the teams came out where company looked, Vincent Kompany looked into all of his teammates' eyes one by one, as if he was sort of looking for a bit of fear, looking to see whether they were concerned and whether their self confidence was still there. And I think actually that when even Kompany didn't have his best game of the tournament, and it was probably just one game too far. It's a steep learning curve for them. They'll be better for this experience in Euro 2016, but it was a disappointing way for them to go out.
Hi Dom, was there any reaction to Eden Hazard's performance in particular by some of the Belgian press pack there?
Well, Wilmots was asked about it, and he refused the sort of usual, I'm not going to talk about individual players. I think when Belgium look back at this tournament, they will say that people like Kevin De Bruyne, even Kevin Morales, also Dries Mertens, all offered maybe a bit. They sort of lived up to their billing. I don't think Eden Hazard ever did. He had a few flashes in the group stage and against the US, but this is a player that the Belgium thought could be their Messi, a player that could go out there and tear teams to shreds. And I don't think at any point in the tournament he did that. And today he was horribly peripheral. It said everything that, you know, they're chasing the game, they're 1-0 down in what is essentially still a tight contest, and they took him off. They didn't trust him to be the one to unlock Argentina, and I think that sums it up. I don't know, look, maybe he's not fully fit, maybe there's a reason for it, but I do think that sometimes maybe he was tired after a long Premier League season. I don't know. I don't think he lived up to his billing in this tournament, and the hope will be that he learns from it and comes back stronger in 2 years' time in France.
All right. Where are you off to next, Dominic?
I'm back to Rio briefly tomorrow, then Belo Horizonte for the first semi-final, and then Sao Paulo for the second, and then back to the final in Rio. So a busy week ahead, but it should be quite good fun.
All right, Dominic. Well, listen, you enjoy your magnificent tour of some of the most prestigious matches in world football in one of the nicest countries around, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Cheers, James. All the best, lad.
Cheers, Dominic. I was mentioning at least two moments of genius. I count the Higuain finish on for the goal. That was amazing, wasn't it?
Yeah, because I mean, he took it so quickly that he gave both Kompany no chance and Courtois no chance. And Courtois has been outstanding in this tournament. I mean, even in late on in that game, Messi had the one-on-one and he stopped him again. I mean, apart from that one moment that they had, their defence stood relatively firm. Although, you know, I agree with Scott, I think Argentina, particularly in the first half, perhaps gave their most convincing performance since their first half against Bosnia. Garay, the centre-back, looked solid. I think the decision to drop Fernandes, his partner, was justified. Mascherano seemed to be linking defence and attack quite well. And Higuain obviously scored. And we're seeing now Messi perhaps not scoring like he did in the group stages, but creating.
Yeah, running the show.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, doom and gloom meantime for their neighbours and, of course, the host Brazil, after the news about Neymar definitely out, as everyone now knows, and we sadly didn't know when we talked about that quarterfinal yesterday, with the fractured vertebrae, TV show hosts in tears, angry headlines on all the papers, all that kind of thing. And FIFA saying they're going to take a very good look at Zuniga's challenge, but I don't know quite what they're going to do about that. Did you think that it was so very much beyond the pale?
I don't. Having seen it again, he's looking at the ball rather than Neymar. Now, presumably he must have known where Neymar was, but whilst he's looking, Neymar stops running to control the ball on his chest or hold it up. And yeah, his knee's high, but it's late in the game. Zuniga's probably a little bit tired. And also, you have to, I don't think there was any malice there. And also, from his perspective, they were a goal down. Conceding a foul at that stage and losing minutes would be counterintuitive, wouldn't it? So, I think it was just unfortunate.
Mm. You certainly wouldn't have expected it to fracture his back, would you?
No, I mean, it's some strong knee.
Yeah, certainly is. Crowd at the game tonight between Costa Rica and Netherlands chanting Neymar's.
Yeah, and the Argentina game as well.
Ah, well, also a little bit earlier, we spoke to Fernando Duarte, who'd just been listening to Brazil's chief medical officer give his diagnosis of Neymar's injury. We asked him about the prospects for Brazil without Neymar.
I thought it was pretty much a way to explain what was happening. I mean, yesterday we had information that he suffered that, the break in his back. He was trying to explain very technically what happened, and especially that the injury does not present any kind of risk for Neymar's career or for Neymar's life. Mm. It's something that heals in 3 to 6 weeks, and he should be ready to play again in 40 days. The doctor, though, was very, very angry about the challenge and about the fact that he claims that FIFA are not punishing high tackles enough, and that more injuries might happen in this World Cup.
Mm. Okay. The mood in general in Brazil, I saw a lot of the newspaper headlines talking about a cowardly attack and generally pointing the finger at Zuniga. What's the mood generally among people?
Well, I think people are still a bit shocked, James, but you know what? I've also sensed a lot of kind of like positive reactions from this. You know, he's going to be missed. It was horrible to see him kind of like on a stretcher going to a helicopter today. It was like one of the worst visions in my career as a sports writer to see the idol of a Brazilian team be taken away that way. But I have the impression, and a lot of people as well, that the team pretty much gelled with that, and they're going to pretty much go like a bunch of Buccaneers to get the Germans, and that might be a good way. You know, to be honest, now they have to play the team more than ever because they lost the talisman. They lost the player that was bailing them out. So
yeah.
A lot of press reaction here was around that. And obviously, everybody wants to hang Zuniga from a lamppost in this country.
Right.
Which I'm not endorsing, by the way. I'm not saying that they should do so. But you know how passionate my countrymen are.
I'm glad you're not endorsing endorsing it. Of course, a lot of people, neutrals watching the game, were of the opinion that the Brazilians were fouling even more than the Colombians, and that they'd almost helped create a mood of violent challenges, which ultimately that one of their players fell foul of. But there's been comparisons drawn with Pelé's injury, no, in 1962, and what happened after that?
Well, it is comparable, but we haven't got Garrincha and Didi in the team. I mean, the team who needs you to rise, obviously players like Oscar, Hulk, and Fernandinho, for example, even Paulinho, they will have to respond pretty promptly. I mean, we cannot basically afford leniency against the Germans. I mean, it's a very professional German team. We saw that in what they did against France. They scored and sorted the game out in 15 minutes. And, you know, they're going to try to do the same thing with Brazil. Just addressing your comment again about violence, yeah, statistics show that Brazil pretty much made more fouls, but Neymar was also the most fouled athlete in this competition. So, you know, it swings both ways, and I just think that you cannot accuse any Brazilian players of doing what Zuniga did yesterday, sending somebody to the hospital. As for the professional fouling, man, Scolari just turned Brazil into a club, the British club side yesterday. They, you know, rotating and getting games, and that took him out of the game. Listen, they want to win this World Cup, and they're going to win it ugly if it's possible. They did it before in 1994, and people who think that they should play like in 1982... are the same people who expect Tibet to remain a rural thing. You know, the game has changed, and Brazil are going to do whatever they want to win, man. And winning ugly is something that people in this country accept sometimes.
Mm. Okay, is Thiago Silva going to be the bigger miss, though, for you against Germany?
Well, there's an interesting thing about Thiago Silva. Brazil are trying to get the yellow card rescinded, which is pretty much unheard of in World Cup history. According to the Brazilian FA, there is a legal loophole, but the laws of the game allow this kind of a protest, but there hasn't been any kind of precedent according to the Brazilian Football Association, Football Confederation, CBF. They claim the keeper pretty much fouled Thiago on the ball. It looks like a bit of a knee-jerk thing. It's something that they need to do because they find it very, very unfair that Thiago got the card. If I was in Silva's shoes, I've never been in the ball in the first place. But I have instinct. He got himself, you know, got a silly booking, and he's going to be suddenly missed. However, Dante coming in is a guy who knows all these players, and it could be interesting to see how he's going to behave against his fellow, you know, his teammates. The only problem there being that they're usually on the right side of the defense, which is not the best thing in the world. Well, you know, it's what it takes. But Thiago, definitely a massive blow for Brazil, especially after the match he had. So many people criticizing him, questioning his emotional intelligence. He had a hell of a game, James.
Mm. All right, listen, one final question then, Fernando. If, by some terrible chance, Brazil do go out in the semi-final on Tuesday, will it be seen as a failed World Cup for them, or will getting to the semi-final be enough for the people? Though they'll obviously be disappointed. Will that be enough? Or will it be a national tragedy?
It's not going to be a national tragedy, especially after yesterday. People, now they're expecting Brazil to lose, but they know it became really difficult now that Brazil are going to have to play this kind of like horrendous heavyweight bout match against Germany and try to scrape him points. I mean, people will understand now that with Rami Ma, they stand a lesser chance. However, if Brazil just lay down and to be killed, people are being angry. If they die, you know, fighting, they die with like still kind of like swinging the sword, I don't think people will be upset. And that's me included. I mean, the thing about Brazil crumbling down here would be the biggest problem. And they're not crumbling down. When it was time for them to step up, they've done it so far. Sorry, we had to wait. It's a nervous thing, man. It's a very difficult experience. It's my third World Cup, but the first one that I actually give a huge monkey about Brazil, you know, actually getting really nervous in games. It's a different vibe. It's a different atmosphere. It's very different. It's another thing when you are at home and seeing your own supporters there in the stadium and watching the team. So it will be a very, very tense couple of days for me.
Fernando's World Cup 3. This time it's personal. Fernando, listen, really enjoy yourself. Fingers crossed, for Tuesday. I hope you can have a good time until then. Don't work too hard, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Yeah, all in one game, this should be a fantastic game of football, you know? I mean, that's something that I've been eager to see in this World Cup as well. You know, how bigger can it get? Brazil, Germany, okay, it's better than Zonte, but, you know, could have been a more exciting Brazilian town, but still, with this thing of Brazil only playing Rio if they go to the final. But, you know, it is everything we dream about when we start in this profession, that one day you're going to be in a World Cup, perhaps a home World Cup, and see a classic of world football. Having said that, let's remember, Brazil and Germany only played once in a World Cup history, and Brazil won. Ooh. I'm much happier that the French didn't make it, to be honest.
Fernando Duarte. What's the point that we mentioned there, and I don't think it's one that the Brazilians are particularly big on, is that they kind of created that whole foul fest themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the finger needs to be pointed a wee bit at Scolari. I'm sure it won't, for sending his team out. I mean, Fernandinho was a man possessed in the first half. He'd quite easily have got sent off. And, you know, they were obviously putting it around for most of the game, and which isn't to condone what happened, but you can sort of understand. And if, you know, Rodriguez getting kicked from pillar to post, then eventually, you know, tempers are going to fray.
Well, a lot of people say, oh, he wasn't kicked that much. It was only six times during the game. But that was only the fouls the referee actually blew for. That was half the problem. But there you go. There you go. Anyway, a great shame to see Neymar out. It'll be really interesting to see, of course, what happens to the Brazilian side without him. And as we mentioned again in there, Thiago Silva's absence could prove to be pretty crucial itself. Although Dante's a good fellow to be having coming in, no?
Yeah, he's all right.
Really?
Well, I mean,
I think of him as quite good because he plays at the back for Bayern Munich. Yeah, but he's actually not that good.
Well, I look at that back line for Bayern, I think it's, even though great in the Bundesliga, and I don't think it's up to much, really.
Oh.
Well, in terms of this stand, I mean, it's that Dante Boateng sort of partnership. I think there are better centre-back partnerships in the world than that one. I'm not taking anything away. Look, they won the treble last year, and they did great things in
Germany
this year.
They got torn apart by Real Madrid, of course, this year. But, yeah, it can happen. Well, those are your two semi-finals then. Brazil against Germany on Tuesday, Argentina against Netherlands on Wednesday, and they look to be absolute sizzlers. We, in the absence of any football to talk about, are going to be back on Tuesday with our reaction to the first game and our preview of the second. So, do have a super time between now and then, and a quick salute to producer Ben, to James Horncastle, and to Scott Murray, and thanks for being with us. Bye.
World Cup Football Daily, just like being in Brazil.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace. With World Cup fever taking over, we at The Guardian are pretty sure that you're thinking big too. So maybe now is the time to use Squarespace to create your own professional website for your small business, portfolio, or blog. It's easy. You could create your own site during halftime. Just go to squarespace.com to start your free trial. And to support this podcast, use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.